From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Geek me all knowing box set, stay open May 4th. I'm hoping we're gonna be hot as before. This red looks hardcore, and I don't want Sith running the galaxy.
Listening to Comics with Kenobi.
It's issue number 7, which means we have guest stars this time. And our super special guest, Star Wars super friend, Heather Antos, an assistant editor at Marvel Comics, whose touch is all over the Star Wars comics that you love and read. And there's more to that, and you're going to love the interview. Jeff, what's going on?
Well, folks, I just want to say this interview is what you call a get in the parlance of the media. So Matt Moore, with his infinite connections, was able to supply that to us. So thank you, Matt, for doing that interview. And everybody, be sure and listen to it all the way through, because we do finally get a confirmation on the pronunciation of Vader's cohort.
Yes, we do.
Doctor that we've been calling by every name in the book.
A certain space archaeologist whom I think one day will ultimately get her own monthly series, or at least a limited series. Or if JJ, if you're listening to this podcast, which I know you are, JJ, because I know you do, because I know that's what you do when you're in there in the editing bay and you're taking a break from getting ready to get the Force Awakens out. You're thinking, Comics with Kenobi, it's gonna calm me, it's gonna soothe me. JJ, get the archaeologist in the film.
Make Absolutely. What do you think about all these rumors of Hayden Christensen appearing in Episode 7?
It's kind of like I see Attack of the Clones, and all I can think of is James Dean going, "You're tearing me apart, Batman.
Tearing me apart."
You know, I think it's great if he comes back. I mean, you know, it's you know, he looks just like he looked when he was doing the movies, and you know his acting, while stilted and wooden to begin with, did actually get a little bit better. I mean, he did become, you know, his character was a little insolent and a bit of a big crybaby. But
I've always maintained he's a better actor than those films portrayed, because I defy any actor to make that dialogue work. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, look, I actually sat and I watched My Life as a House that he was in with Kevin Spacey, and he was really good in that movie.
And Shattered Glass.
Yes, phenomenal. Yes. How could I forget Shattered Glass?
Yeah, so I know you of all people.
Yes, seriously. That's goodness gracious. But so, I hope he does come back, because, you know, and I have to give a very public shout out to Brian Young, who is a co-host of Full of Sith, as well as very deeply involved in the Star Wars mythos. You can see his amazing tweets over at the Swank Motron. But it's because of him that I sat down a couple years ago and rewatched the prequel trilogy. Wife and kids were gone, and it was just me. And I literally spent 2 days watching, taking notes, rewatching, taking notes, comparing, contrasting, doing some research, and it changed my opinion of the prequel trilogy to the point, you know, that I understand, and there's a lot about it that I like. There's some of it I still don't like, but all told, it was good storytelling. And it gave us, you know, the Clone Wars. So
exactly. And they definitely had their moments. So as far as comics goes this week, we are talking about Kanan issue number 6 and Lando issue number 4.
Yes.
And, you know, I got to tell you, just right out the gate, I enjoyed both of these issues. We'll focus on Kanan first. So this is the first issue since the end of the initial story arc.
Yeah, we are starting what they call in the industry the second story arc. Essentially, with the first 5 issues are done, you'll be able to look for the first Kanan trade edition probably in November or December, and then the next 5 issues should be another separate story arc.
But this one picks up right after the last story arc ended. You know, we ended with we found out that the entire first story arc was a flashback, because they were landing on are we pronouncing it Kaler?
I was pronouncing it Kaler.
Works for me, Kaler.
I mean, I guess we could call it collar or collar, but collar sounds kind of weird. Collar works. I like collar.
Collar works. And so this one picks up right at the next moment from the end of the last issue. And first off, this cover, at first glance, the cover looks a little generic with all the characters from Rebels facing off against somebody at the end of the hall. But then I just noticed down the reflection in the floor is a young Caleb Doom.
Which is nice, isn't it? Because
Very nice.
It's a nice little way of, you know, saying, hey, this is where Kanan is, but look, this is Caleb. And it's this reverse image, you know, it's harkening back to his training as a Padawan.
Eventually, I'm going to stop assuming that they're doing anything halfway with this series because, they just keep knocking it out of the park. So
They do. And this one was nice. I enjoyed this one because it gets us in the spirit of the Rebels TV show. Now, whether this was intentional because, you know, we're coming up on the premiere of the second season fairly soon, you know, we don't know. But even if it wasn't, this is pure serendipity.
Really is. And I enjoyed the issue a lot. It opens up on collar. And what's interesting to me is there's a point here right at the beginning where he says, I do not want to be here. In fact, I hate collar and have avoided it for years. So is Kallar Kanan's Tatooine?
I would think it is.
And
I
mean, is it possible that he has kids hidden from him here that he doesn't know about?
No, it's very clear that this was the place, this was the planet where his transformation took place. Yeah, this is sort of his Peter Pan moment. You know, he went from Pan the boy to Pan the man. On this planet, when he realized it is a great big galaxy, it's a great big universe out there, and the only way he is going to survive is if he looks out for himself. I think it's when he truly was able to break free of the bonds, or in this case, the bondage of the Jedi Order, and fully accept the fact that the life that he had intended to live is not and will never be what he thought it was going to be. In other words, it's almost like he said goodbye to his childhood.
Right, just had to start from scratch.
Yeah.
And we get images of him remembering when he gets to different locations in this issue, remembering when he was still a Padawan, and I like the way that they drew that. But the crew of the Ghost is here to pick up a shipment of supplies to carry back to Tarkin Town on Lothal, which we've seen in the Rebels TV show. And they find the crates, but they don't find the goods. And they're sort of ambushed by Gamut Kee, who is the provincial governor of Collar, and all of his lackeys. And, I like this exchange that they have. You know, Hera says, you know, we're hardly smugglers. There may be something to your tip. We found these empty crates here when we arrived. You know, she's really quick on her feet. I love that. And, he says, you know, do you have any objections to me searching your ship? And she says, of course not, because, of course, there's nothing there. But I got the feeling that he kind of knew more than he was letting on, that he really did suspect him. Did you get that same?
I kind of got that vibe. I did get that vibe. And I got to get something out of the way here immediately. One thing that longtime readers of the series are going to notice is that the art is different.
I noticed that as well. It looks a little
cartoony.
Yeah, a little more like the young adult series with the Clone Wars.
Oh, the one from 2003?
The comic book. I can't remember the name of the series, but it's like the Clone Wars Chronicles or something like that they did several years back. It was for like, you know, the tween crowd. That's
what it reminds me of. Yes, indeed. Yes, I know what you're talking about. That's one of my son's favorites. He really enjoys that, and he's 10, of course, so he would enjoy that.
Right.
This one, to my mind, it's not bad, but the reason being, this art is done by Jacopo Camagni, and I think I'm probably mutilating his first name, Jacopo Camagni, perhaps. But this art, to me, the impression that I was getting throughout the book was that it almost kind of reminded me of the baby Looney Tunes. From the 1990s,
remember that? Yes,
because you know a lot of unusual dimensions and a lot of big eyes, sort of.
A little simpler. Everything is a little simpler. It's sort of especially page on my digital copy, page 7, with the 9 panels.
Yes,
very nice. Much. Yeah,
I like, but see, I like it when they do the 9 panels, you know, because that is very much evocative of. You know you've got a lot of detailed story, and you want, at the same time, you want to focus on the various characters that are making up the story. And that's exactly what they do on this panel, because you can see it's almost like a tic-tac-toe with the crew of the Ghost. You know, diagonally down to the right, diagonally down to the left.
And even Chopper gets his own panel.
Yeah, so which is kind of cool. And then you've got Kanan in the midst. And so it's I kind of like that. It works for me.
Yeah, so. but it did kind of take me out of it here and there. For instance, in the very next page, Hera's eyes were just huge. And
I thought I was looking at Harley Quinn.
Yeah, exactly. So. It's just a little unsubtle for my taste. But again, I do, as always, I love the colors that they use in this. And I'm not one to really criticize anybody's art, because Lord knows I can't do any better even remotely. But it was a little disjointed to me. It seemed a little disjointed, especially considering I really liked the story that we got in this one.
Yeah, and we got a great story about this. I mean, and it was really, it's really adding to the foundation of Rebels. This is something that will, it wouldn't surprise me at least to maybe see some sort of mention of this, even if it's in passing, in the TV show. But it also gives you a firmer idea of what it is you're dealing with and what it is you're getting into, even when you're watching the TV show.
Radio, I have no doubt that we'll hear something about their mission to Kaler.
Yeah.
That they took. Kanan, throughout this whole issue, Kanan is very neurotic about being recognized. And with good reason, obviously. He doesn't want anybody to know who he is. But it started to get to be a bit much until he gets to the room where he's supposed to meet his contact to pick up the supplies, and he meets Tapusk. Is that his name?
Yeah, Tapusk.
Tapusk.
So,
thinking he's Kazmir,
and then of course, yeah, and they're like, wait, and I was getting vibes from Star Wars: The New Hope. Well, that's a name I've not heard in such a long
right. Now, as good as Hera is on her feet, Kanan does not do as well in his feet in this encounter.
No, he is not. He when it comes to physical actions, he is very deft and very, very, very nimble. When it comes to so much trying to recover verbal gaffes, nah.
Yeah, not so much. Not so
he's,
much.
He's got all the grace of a bantha that's been drinking a lot of wine.
Exactly. A drunk bantha. That's very true. That's a good analogy.
Indeed.
But he tries to work his way out of it, and like you said, he ends up having to use his fists, and doesn't ever go for his lightsaber, but he is able to get himself out of this jam by headbutting everybody. But then he ends up getting literally stabbed in the back.
Literally.
After he calls everybody in.
Which is craziness. Although I have to admit, it was great seeing the wonderful mix of alien life forms in these panels. I mean, we have what looks like to be a Rodian. We have an Athorian, and it looks like a human as well. So
yeah, we got a little bit of everything, and it's a lot of fun. And we even had a what looked to be, I thought for a second it was a it was whatever Walrus Man is, whatever Pondabot is.
Darn it.
Yeah, exactly. But
don't worry, PK, we'll look it up.
But he's got four eyes, so I'm not sure.
Well, no, they have those.
Do they?
Yeah.
See, I'm a fan. You can tell I'm a huge fan because I notice these things.
I should know this, though. God, that's like one of the most common aliens in the Star Wars universe.
If only I had access to some sort of device that would allow me to look that up. Let me see.
I have heard of devices, these things. They're like vast super highways of information.
Let's see who can get it first.
I'm typing panda.
A quash.
An aqualish.
Aqualish. And that's what I thought, but for some reason I was thinking that was Squidhead.
No, that's a Quarren.
Quarren, that's right.
I'm amazed that I'm married.
Mon Calamari, Quarren, and Aqualish. Well, yeah, so some of them do have four eyes. I was not aware of that.
Yep.
So he does, but so Kanan gets himself out of this jam by beating the tar out of everybody, and Chopper just kind of sits around and watches. Now, why do you suppose Kanan does not feel the presence of, and it's Ki who stabs him in the back again?
Yeah, it is, but you would think that, he's just not thinking. I think he's still sort of, he's flush full of adrenaline. He's feeling pretty cocksure, and you know, he's even sort of, I mean, and you see Chopper just freaking out, going, "Whoa, wow, wee-whoa, you know, what are you buzzing on about now? You're not paying attention."
Oops.
So, but still, I do like the fact that he's thinking like a Jedi still, though. You know, sloppy Kanan, a rookie mistake, unworthy of a Padawan.
Anybody blames a planet. I can't maintain focus, colors too.
Doesn't blame himself. But I do like how they showed the two people who had the most influence on his life kind of looking over him, you know, with, Depa Balaba. And then, of course, Casimir.
And I was wrong. It wasn't Key who stabs him in the back. It's one of Key's lackeys that he knocks out.
Yep, you're right.
But this is where I get confused. So Key has him stabbed in the back only to let him go. So he's playing an angle here somehow. He's going to let him take the goods and everything, but he's sort of promising him to be an ally against the Empire.
So, well, it's almost like he's sort of trying to feel each other out, you know, kind of like, are you a friend of the Empire? Are you ambivalent? Are you a foe? It almost reminds me of how history recorded in the days of the Roman Empire when Christianity was taking root, and you know, people would be walking down the Roman highway or the Roman road, and they'd see one another and they'd make small talk, and somebody would sort of take a stick and kind of sketch a fish in the road and kind of look and go, eh? So I think that's sort of kind of what they're setting up.
I do love the exchange that he has. He says, "But even an old politician such as myself can develop an aching back." And Kanan replies with, "Especially as one can never bow low enough to satisfy certain Imperials."
It's wonderful. It's wonderful dialogue.
Love the dialogue.
And that's all Greg Weisman again.
Oh yeah. Well, kudos to Greg Weisman. Love it. And so he decides to let him go. And so Kanan radios to the crew to pick him up, but then he sees blood on his hand from his shoulder and passes out. So do we think that he was poisoned, or do you think it's just blood loss?
I think it's just blood loss. I mean, I think he wasn't sort of realizing, you know, the depth of the wound. I mean,
the adrenaline finally wore off and he just...
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
Makes sense.
And clearly, you know, we kind of know how it ends anyway. So, you know, unless this was set far after the existing TV show, which I don't think that it is. Right. So, you know, we know he's going to be okay. And that, while that kind of diminishes the storytelling, it doesn't take it all out of it. It doesn't take the air out of it.
We knew how the prequels are going to end, but it didn't make, you know, episode 3 any less tense.
No.
Even knowing how it was going to end. But I do love this last panel of him laying on the ground with all of the ghosts of the past looking down upon him.
And so, all of the ghosts, not just the ones important to him, not the ones that have influenced and molded his life, but, well, you know what? That's not true, because those clones were important to him.
They did. Yeah, they were, in a different way. And, it reminds me sort of the end of Jedi, where, the Force ghosts are looking on after Luke. It's very reminiscent of that to me. And I love the fact that Chopper is drawn in as if he is a ghost. The ghosts are sort of standing in front of him.
That's a good idea.
Only thing that I don't like about this is that the sort of aura surrounding them all looks like the transporter beam from Star Trek. And I don't like mixing my sci-fi and space fantasy together. But
well, if they could have just thrown a Dalek somewhere in there, that'd have been perfect.
Right, exactly. You get the trifecta, the Dort trifecta. So that's the end of the episode. They're on their way to him, and we're assuming that they're going to find him before anything much happens, but we don't know what's going to happen with Key. We don't know if they're going to get everything back to Lothal. So this is really a lot of connective tissue in this issue.
It is, and it's a lot of connective issue, not just for the series, not for the comic, but for the show as well, because it's given us sort of like this behind the scenes peek of how they're not just the series, but I think most of the setup leading into A New Hope and even into Rogue One, because they're showing us how obsequiously they're developing networks. You know, and if you'll recall, there are mentions of Fulcrum in this book as well.
And remind me what Fulcrum is.
Fulcrum, remember, and Fulcrum was the big reveal at the end of season 1 of Rebels.
Fulcrum
turned out to be Ahsoka Tano.
Right, that's right.
So,
who
it turns out, apparently, big spoiler here, 5, 4, 3, 2, One. Spoiler. In the new books that were released, in the Journey to Force Awakens, in one of them, it's actually mentioned that Wedge was brought into the Rebel Alliance by Fulcrum.
Oh.
Thus endeth the spoilers.
I wonder if that's why they call him Wedge. Wedge.
Ooh, oh my God! I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Well, fair call. You know what? Your new comics with Kenobi nickname is Archimedes.
Yes, I because I look like an owl.
Well, oh, that too.
So that's it for this issue of Kanan. Again, really enjoyed the writing. It's a good story. Not a whole lot happens, but again, as far as connective tissue goes, there's a lot to chew on, a lot of intercostal connective tissue to chew on. I don't know what I'm trying to say with that.
No, I know exactly what you're trying to say. It gives us a lot of gristle that needs to be there because it provides flavor for the wider piece of meat.
Exactly. That's why we keep you around, because you make sense of all my ramblings.
I hope to talk pretty one day. So. And speaking of pretty, like I said, the art was good. I enjoyed it. It just, it's not Pepe Larraz, whom we love and adore. And I believe Pepe is going to be back in the next issue. So, but sometimes artists need to take a break.
Right. And again, I didn't mind it. I have my preferences, and this is not my preference.
That's okay. I mean, it's as art goes, it's good. It's not bad, not in the least. It's
no, not at all.
It's just a little. I mean, like I said, there were some panels where I thought I was reading a very excellently done Jimmy Palmiotti, Amanda Connor, Harley Quinn book. But then I think Marvel might get a little upset if we start referring to DC Comics while talking about Marvel Comics. So,
what do you think about the preview we get of the next issue? This cover that we've got of someone in a Bacta tank.
Well, that's the thing I love about these covers, and especially these previews, because it tries to give you some stuff without giving it all away.
Right.
And yet you sort of kind of get this, oh, man, that looks so cool sort of vibe. We'll see.
I love the 2-1-B in the background, though.
Isn't that great, though?
Yeah.
And I'm kind of wondering, but you know what? He's clearly much a Padawan, so I'm wondering, and I bet that looks like that may be Deba Balaba.
See, I was thinking it might also be Padme.
Well, it could be, yeah. Look at the way the hair is done.
Yeah.
That could definitely be a Padme.
I guess we'll find out. We'll find out next month.
Oh, well.
So, is
it just me, or does he look like Lionel Messi, the soccer player?
I knew who that was.
Excuse me, the footballer.
Sorry, I'm an American, so I watch baseball and NFL football. Soccer bores me, so I will take your word for it.
You do know there are other countries, right?
That's what I keep hearing. I'm kidding. I'm not an ugly American, folks. But I do. I've tried to watch soccer/football, and I just... have you seen the episode of the IT Crowd where they go to the football match?
Yes.
Ooh. Oh, look, someone's kicking a ball. Oh, look, someone kicked it the other direction. Outstanding. That's pretty much me trying to watch soccer.
Sport.
Yes. The thing about Arsenal is they always try to walk it in. That's all I know about football. But so, folks, again, this issue of Kanan, sort of required reading if you want to continue with the series, and gives us a good taste of what's to come. And I'm looking forward to next month. I want to see what happens next.
I do, too.
So that brings us to my current favorite comic book being published, Lando, issue number 4. I'm going to be sad to see this series end.
I am too. We've got one more issue to go, and I'm really, really hoping that perhaps they could bring it back around for maybe another 5-part mini somewhere down the road.
They have.
Charles Soule, if you're listening to this, whatever we got to do, man, we'll make this happen. If we got to sue somebody... You're a lawyer. We'll hire you. We're going to make this happen.
So where we left off last issue, Lobot is in a Bacta tank, recovering from the wounds inflicted by apparently the zombified Emperor's Royal Guards. And they had found a cache of Sith, would you call it memorabilia, in a room on the ship. And one of the devices in the background seems to have been activated. So
this is like,
what's going to happen with that?
This is something. We're bordering now. I mean, the first three issues have been this wonderful heist story. And this fourth issue is continuing this heist trend, but it's also, it seems like it's now throwing in these elements. At some point, I expected Wes Craven just to sort of pop out of the panel, or even John Carpenter, because now it's turning into this sort of very subtle yet creepy
horror story. Sort of a sci-fi horror story.
It literally is. It's, and I love it. You know, I want to buy it at Carnation, and I want to take it to the fall formal.
You know, I do too, but again, we'll talk about it a little later. Parts of this image of this this issue really sort of broke my heart, and we'll talk about that when we get to it.
Okay.
But again, we opened the cover. This is my least favorite cover yet, which is to say, it's only slightly awesome. But I do love it. You know, you've got Chanath Cha looking at a hologram of Lando, but it doesn't really look like Lando. I can't decide who that looks like.
I see Lando.
I see that it's supposed to be Lando, but somehow it looks like Lando by way of Lionel Richie, somehow.
Well, you know, hello.
Is it me you're looking for?
Is it me you're looking for?
Maybe that's what they were going for. But we opened.
Well, that's the fun thing, you know, because Alex Maleev did the cover as well, you know, and he's done the previous covers that we all love.
So it probably is something along those lines. So we open again on this beautiful.
Do you think maybe he's looking at her, going once, twice, three times a bounty hunter?
Well, we'll find out later. It's three times a lady.
What? That's awesome.
So yeah, we open on this great image of the starfield with. The Sith infiltrator, basically, looks like Darth Maul's ship, creeping up on the Imperialis, and Chanath Cha flies in, and she's in communication with 066, or is it 066, or would you say 066? The droid.
I'm going to say 066.
That makes more sense to me, too. So she's with 066, and I like the little antagonistic relationship that they've developed.
It's wonderful because it adds further credence to the fact that while in Star Wars robots are robots, they do have these personality chips, or at least perhaps, you know, as I've always suspected, I think that once we do get to viable robotics, that the robots will sort of kind of just develop these emotional tangents.
Right.
Or we will imprint upon it.
Exactly. Probably more of that than anything.
You know what? I'm going to change back. I'm going to say that's an O.
Okay.
I'm going to say that's 066. I'm looking at the lettering here, and if, you know, that O in 066 on that bottom panel.
It's a little too round to be as.
Well, it's a perfect example. It's a perfect copy of the O in codes. So, you know,
context clues, ladies and gentlemen.
It is. Well, you know, it's, and Joe Caramagna does the lettering, and he's one of those who are well regarded in the industry for his lettering ability. So,
he's very deliberate. So. I love this image of her, of Cha standing at the end of this very long hallway at the top of page, whatever, what is it, page 4?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. It's a very simple shot, but I just love that with the lines on the hallway going down, the horizontal lines going down the length of the hallway. I just, yeah, I dig it.
It's good stuff. It's got good form. It does wonderful depth of field, and you get an idea of how long and how grandiose this ship is.
Exactly. And so inside the storage room with all the artifacts, the Sith artifacts, we've got Corran with Lando and the twins, Alexan and what's the other one? The two twins. talking about, you know, Lando's trying to figure out how much this stuff is worth. And slowly but surely, Alexan is getting mesmerized by this device that we saw earlier. And I'm just thinking this is not going to end well.
No, it's not, but you have to kind of wonder what this helmet is. You know, what this artifact is. Is it even a helmet? Is it a head, perhaps?
That's what I'm wondering, if it is somebody's head that's been, you know, preserved somehow.
You know, because, you know, what it's done to the royal guards is frightening. It's almost like it's walking dead at it, almost, if you will. You know, and the fact that, you know, Lando... Yeah, Lando's looking at it, you know, and Corran, and he and Corran are talking, and then, you know, they look away, and then you see this sort of this red flash.
And, right.
You know, I mean,
Like it's just like this, like something. It's almost like that movie. What was it? Fallen.
Yeah.
Where the evil spirit kept jumping from body to body. That's possibly it.
And then, of course, you see him sort of, go grab the double bladed lightsaber.
Now, I will say this issue has the first, I think, serious misstep for me, in that there is a horrible, horrible joke. They're talking about Corin says we have enough credits to maybe buy a moon or two, and Lando says, you know what I'd call it? I'd call it Lando Land. Galaxy needs a Lando Land. Really? Really? That's the best you could come up with?
I can see the humor in it. I can see where they're going with it. But yeah, it did seem a little out of step.
And so here, talking about Alexan, grabbing the lightsaber and everything, and this is what broke my heart. He looks at his twin and cuts his/her arm off. And I don't know why it was so it just upset me. It really upset me because we got this nice single panel shot of him cutting the arm off, and the twin is just horrified.
Well, it's Pavel who loses the arm, and yeah, it is horrifying. And I was kind of glad they devoted the full page to it because it's not what I was expecting. They were sitting there leading up to it, with Alex and, admiring the blade. And then just sort of that,
you get the panel of his eyes glowing red.
And that hint of red reflected
and the yellow, which is what happened, if you remember, in episode 3.
Uh-huh.
When Anakin became Vader. That's what happened.
And he got, was affected by the dark side. So, which, means they're, are Alexan and Pavel also force sensitive?
Well, so that would explain their being able to best the Royal Guards.
Their
acumen in that. And see, the thing is, I saw it coming. I kind of knew that this was what was going to happen, but it was so perfectly paced. It was paced, like you said, like a sort of a sci-fi horror movie.
It was. And to me, that was really good because it's hard to do pacing in that way in a comic book.
Right.
Because a lot of people are more used to, they want bang, boom, slam, bam, crack, thud. And this one, it was just, it's almost like you could just hear the silence in the room, and you're like, then
there's a lot of empty space in each panel.
And there is, but it's also that empty space is being filled by the reader. I was sitting there
That's what I mean, yeah.
And I was hearing the John Williams score.
Right.
Going through each panel.
Even the panels where there are word balloons, there's just a lot of, and when I say empty space, I mean just no word balloons, just a lot of art there. And yeah, it is. It works so well. And so then, of course, Lando and Corin freak out and run out of the room, and Alexan does not chase them.
No, not in the least.
So, but they're able to get the door closed, and this is, and then Corin and Lando have this conversation about what they're going to do.
What they're going to do and what it is they may be dealing with.
Right.
So, because you see Corin, going down, Corin mentions the fact that, that history is written by the winners. When he said, the Jedi did an exceptionally thorough job of suppressing knowledge of the Sith. So now they have very little to go on.
with which to battle. And I like that he says the common theme was the idea that the Sith were somehow corrupted, or that they did the corrupting. It's really unclear. And I love that because it's just like with every society, we think we know what happened, but we don't unequivocally.
No. It's all subject to perhaps some interpretation. It could change, as some sort of, Rosetta Stone comes to life.
And I like that they give us a reminder of, what had happened with the guards, what they found when they took their masks off, that sort of mummified/zombified, face. Now, let me ask you something. On the next page, Lando says, "I'll say it again, Corin, you're a fascinating lady." Did we know Corin was a woman?
No, but doesn't really matter.
Doesn't matter. I just was trying to figure out like if I'd missed something before. It is just kind of tossed off, and I like that. It's just, by the way, you're a woman, and I like that they're able to just kind of work that in after we've gotten to know this character, and because really, Ugnaughts are kind of like what is it, Gimli says in Lord of the Rings, dwarf women look just like the men, which has given rise to the myth that there are no dwarf women. Apparently, Ugnaughts are the same way.
Exactly.
So, I love that. And like you said, they're trying to figure out what's going to happen. And Corin decides that she is going to take an escape pod. And yeah. She says, cutting it, I'm surprised I thought of it before you did. Actually, cutting and running is usually your thing, Calrissian. And of course, he says, oh, come on. So at this point, he can't even come up with any snappy comeback.
Well, they're also, they're realizing the gravity of the situation. So, and bear in mind, they don't even realize that somebody's on the ship.
Right. Yeah. We cut back immediately to Chamath Cha, who is skulking around the ship, and, you know, to remind us, oh, by the way, this operative is lurking. Did you ever watch Firefly?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, you remember the last episode, Object in Space, where Richard, the actor that was playing the bounty hunter, that was just skulking around the ship, and nobody knew.
Yeah.
He was systematically knocking everybody out as he went. Richard Brooks?
Yeah, I think it was Richard Brooks.
Yeah, Richard Brooks. I just remember that's the episode where he goes, that ain't no Shepard. My favorite line from the entire series. This is what it reminds me of, though. And, you know, Cha talks 066 into giving her the control codes so that she can mess with stuff inside.
Oh, yeah.
So she shuts off the escape pods, and Corin and Lando, again, they keep having these debates about what to do. You know, Lando doesn't want to leave Lobot, and Corin saying, no, we need to leave Lobot. Look, I like Lobot, but it's not worth dying over. And Lando, of course, doesn't agree. So Corin is going to go, what is it? Corin says, oh, kumph me.
Yeah, oh, kumph me.
Kumph me. But when the loudspeaker comes on and says all passengers and crew escape pods have been deactivated. So then we go back to Alexan and Pavel. And this is where we learn that. Well, first off, Alexan is just being a jerk.
Well, Alexan has got the power of the dark side through him.
What's happened to you? He says, something happened to me I hadn't noticed. Though you, my dear Pavel, you seem to have lost something. Talking about the arm.
Yeah, you know, just a nice little biting sarcasm.
Right. And then Pavel says, I don't understand why you're doing this. This is our last job, and when it's done, we'll have enough to afford a clone. Our child. So are we to infer that they are lovers?
I think that's the implication here.
Okay.
But I mean, are they even, you know, are they even separate? Are they clones themselves?
That's what I was trying to figure out. Is there even any kind of romantic feeling at all, or is it all just a matter of this is the life we're living and we want to train up to be another one of us?
Possibly, but at the same time, you know, you have him going in the next panel, you know, well, no offspring of mine will have a one-armed parent. Could you imagine? So, you know, and then that last that panel, I think I want this.
Right. You know, unlimited power. And so Pavel, even with one arm missing, grabs a staff to start fighting.
It is. And it's almost like, and Alexan is dropping these sort of emperor like
right
barbs.
Give in to your anger, things like that.
You know, it's like, what? It's, you know, it's almost like, you know, what is this? Was this like Sheev's personal helmet or something in there?
Possibly. I refuse to call him Sheev.
But, you know, if you look at the helmet in the background, especially at the bottom of this panel where they're about to, before they start to going at each other with a vibro blade, a vibro axe and a lightsaber staff. Yeah, that helmet, it looks old.
Yeah, it's definitely, and it is, you're right, it's definitely a helmet. I mean, the eyes are glowing in one scene, but they're not glowing now, so.
Yeah, perhaps it's imbued with mystical Sith energy.
I can't wait to find out what this thing is.
Oh, me neither. It's really, really interesting. So.
And so then we cut back to Lando and Corin, again, debating what to do. And then Lando says, I really think we should be careful. I think there's someone else on this ship. And then he sees that Corin has been captured. But Corin's not giving him up. This is what's interesting to me, is Corin is not going to give him up. And I love that we have this moment of Lando talking himself into staying to fight.
Yeah.
He starts to run and he says, no, come on, old boy. Don't run. Not this time. If nothing else, you don't want to give Corran the satisfaction. It's a very, very in character, and it's a very humanizing touch.
It shows that he, while he has the reputation as the scoundrel, which is justly deserved, he's not going to leave his friends, you know, to float in the wind.
Right.
I mean, you know, Han is a perfect example of that. What he did to Han was monstrous. But he may not always
have the right instincts, but he always makes the right decision in the end.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is a nature versus nurture situation, I suppose, or something.
Very
like
much
that.
So
he tries to get the drop on them, but of course, Chana Cha has two guns and says, "What am I, an idiot?" And then Lando Calrissian, and I love that frame because you that panel, you can see Lando's face reflected in the helmet. Love it, because it's something that is it's so cinematic and it seems so simple, but I just have to imagine how you draw something like that.
Well,
again, I'm completely ignorant when it comes to anything art related, so it doesn't take much to impress me, but. Again, this is just I love that little touch,
that reflection.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing, and it's and the detail that that Maliv put into the uniform that she's wearing, the bandolier, there's a bandolier, the cape, both guns with double barrels.
It's amazing stuff. Every single panel, Lando looks like Billy Dee Williams.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So.
I love the artwork. And so then he says, do I know you? You dropped the blaster, tough guy. And so he drops this, probably would have missed you anyway. Corran says, what are you doing, you idiot? And this is my other favorite line from this book is, hey, listen, someone recognizes me and doesn't shoot, I'll take that bet.
Yeah, that's complete. That is so Lando. That is so Lando. And that slow burn, you are the galaxy's biggest fool. Hey. I mean, that sense of relief that washes over him when he realizes.
Who I thought it was going to be?
Whom?
I thought it was going to be the woman from the very beginning of the first issue.
Oh.
That he was trying to get the item from. I, for some reason, I thought...
The Imperial.
The Imperial. I thought it was going to be her. Which might have been a little bit too coincidental. So I'm glad that it wasn't, but that's when I just expected to see that when I saw the helmet come off.
Good stuff. Good stuff.
And so then he says, been a long time. How you doing, lady? And she said, do you know whose ship you stole, you moron?
They still don't know.
No.
And then of course, this vessel belongs to Palpatine. And the way they say it, they keep that, the text of their conversation as the door opens. And it's now very clear that both of them have turned.
Right. Those
to the
two lightsabers coming out. And they come out, and again, they're sort of the way they're walking. It's very inhuman.
Yeah.
Which they're not human, but it's very inorganic, I'll say.
It is. It's like they're being controlled by a darker force from beyond.
This final image, it's so haunting.
They're marionettes.
Yeah. And it is, again, this is really upsetting me for some reason. I didn't realize how connected I was to these two characters, that I had any stake in them. But seeing them being taken over by this and knowing how it's probably going to end, I'm hoping that they don't. My guess is they're not going to die, that they're going to survive. But
I hope they survive. I don't think that they will.
I hope that they do, because like I said, this is just breaking my heart. And again, it's just a testament to the strength of the writing that I'm having this kind of an emotional reaction to what started out, like we said, as this heist story, this really cool, fun heist story. And all of a sudden, there are stakes, very real stakes, and I have skin in the game, for lack of a better term.
This is one of the best stories ever.
I agree.
And it's almost... I hate to keep on, equating it to a movie or a TV show, but this is something that I think I would go see in a theater.
Oh, absolutely.
This would make a great Lando film.
Absolutely. If they ever wanted to do a standalone Lando film, this would be it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are numerous other grand ideas, like, how he, the battle of that maneuver at the Battle of
Tanab,
but it's just, it captures the essence of Lando. And
it does.
And it continues to do so.
Well, and again, he's got an arc that we're seeing.
He is, you know, because it's you know, he knows what he can do, as you know, as does Alex Maleev, and you know, and that's what they do. They're building up. They're reaching the apex, and then they're going to conclude, and it's going to be awesome.
They're stringing us along.
It may be a cliffhanger. That's fine, but you know, it's worth the wait. You know, October 7th cannot get here soon enough.
No kidding. And is this will the next issue be the last? Yeah, to be concluded.
Yep. This will be the last issue. So it's only a 5-issue miniseries.
And they've made tremendous use of the time that they've had.
They have, and you know, that's really good because it sets the future for other miniseries in this scope. I mean, Shattered Empire is a 4-issue miniseries, but other than that, the previous miniseries, what Princess Leia, was 5 issues. Chewbacca is coming. I think it's 4 or 5. I need to double check that right now. Let me look here because I wrote about it on Coffee with Kenobi. And you know, we've got all the latest covers for all of the upcoming books. So I think we're up through December now. So you know, if you guys be sure to head over to Coffee with Kenobi and just, you know, do the search for Star Wars comics, you'll see the tag there. So it's very much worth your time.
And the good news is we'll be back. Our next show will be October 9th, which will be 2 days after this is concluded. So you don't even have to wait through another episode of Comics with Kenobi to find out how it ends if you're not reading along.
Is this a great country or what?
Agreed.
So 5-issue. Yeah, looks like
Chewbacca gets 5 issues.
Chewbacca gets a 5-issue miniseries.
Well, I tell you, they've all got their work cut out for them to top this because this, you know, like you said, this is honestly, and again, I know that my experience is limited, especially compared to you, but this has been one of the most satisfying comics stories I've ever read in my life.
I'm pleased to hear that.
It really has. Regardless of it being Star Wars or anything, just the storytelling has been some of the most satisfying I've ever read.
That's good to know. That's very good to know.
So I'm digging it.
Sweet.
So we're going to take a short break to have a word from our sponsors, and then we'll be back, and you can hear Matt's interview with Heather Antos, who is the what is her official title?
She is assistant editor at Marvel Comics. And we had a really good long-ranging discussion about how she got into comics, some of her creator-owned work, her experience editing. She shepherded a sort of a crime noirish sort of a anthology, which is really awesome. And we also talked about it. You know, she also works on Deadpool for Marvel. And she is very, very, very into Star Wars.
Nice.
Very into Star Wars. And as you know, works hand in glove with Jordan White, who is the editor of all the Star Wars books. And the two of them are, you know, thick as thieves with the Lucasfilm Story Group. So she divulged a lot of really interesting details about the process of how these comics come together and how it's not just you know, it's, you know, editing comic books ain't like about dusting crops,
boy.
So, but and it's a very informative and very edifying look and deep dive into the industry and what it takes to make these books. And she and Jordan are, I mean, they have really set the bar very high. And Heather is a wonderful interview. She actually came up with something and mentioned something that I had never really thought about that you'll find as you listen to the course of the interview. I was asking her about favorite character, and she made a very astute observation that I had never considered, is that of all the characters in Star Wars, they will all get you in trouble. The only ones who will ever get you out of trouble are R2-D2 and Chewbacca.
Absolutely true.
And I thought about that, and I mean, it was something I woke up the next morning thinking, man, she's so right. So,
she should work in comics for a living.
She should.
So I'm looking forward to hearing it. So stay tuned, and we'll be back after the interview with final thoughts and previews of next issue.
Cool.
Hey, it's Dan Z
and Corey Club
from Coffee with Kenobi, and we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes, you've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories. as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader collecting app from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
What follows is Matt's interview with Heather Antos of Marvel Comics. About midway through the interview, we had some technical difficulties, so you may have a little bit of trouble hearing Matt during the second half of the interview, but really, you all came to listen to Heather anyway, didn't you? That's what I thought. Enjoy.
Well, listen, I really appreciate you making time for this, especially at this odd hour. I do appreciate it. But if you want to dive right into it, feel free. Just so you know, like I said, this is for the podcast, we're not going to – I don't strive to get anybody in trouble. So I realize that you and Jordan are in a fairly unique situation when it comes to what you can divulge and what you can actually discuss openly. So,
yeah.
And I do my level best to I can hear that. I will do my level best to respect those boundaries.
No, you're fine. You're fine. Trust me, I live with one of the biggest Star Wars fans in the world, and I don't tell him stuff. So.
Oh gosh, I bet that must be killing him. So. But let's start from the beginning, if you don't mind. I mean, how long have you been with Marvel Comics, what prompted you to join?
I've been with Marvel for a little over 7 months now. And I don't know, I've always loved comics. I've always loved the industry, and it wasn't until I graduated college that I realized, oh, people actually, have careers out of doing this. And so that's when I started, looking into joining the industry, and that's how I met Jordan. And, through a conversation with him, I learned what comic editing was, and it was something that I was interested in. And so I started doing it on my own. About a year after doing that, I touched base with Jordan again, and he asked if I would be interested in interviewing. And next thing you know, I'm his assistant editor on the Star Wars books. It's really funny, too, bringing that up. Today is apparently our one-year Facebook friendship anniversary with Jordan. So it
how fortuitous.
I know.
And where did you go to college?
I went to a small school called Eastern Michigan University in a small town called Ypsilanti, Michigan. I was a double major in theater and film there.
Oh, excellent. Okay. All right. I know Jordan has a profound love for theater and the performing arts. So.
Yeah. Yep, he does.
That's excellent. Well, I also know that you've got experience. I mean, because you did Unlawful Good.
Yes.
Which was pretty awesome, I have to admit.
Oh, thank you.
I remember reading about that when you were kickstarting it.
Cool.
I'm not your average podcaster. I have 30 years of journalism experience behind me, so I know how to research. But in having done that, what did that help? I think to ask you, in terms of what did that bring to the table for you when you were interviewing at Marvel, and particularly when they asked you if you would be part of the Star Wars line.
Continue. Sorry.
Please go ahead.
It was so Unlawful Good was, for people who don't know, it was an anthology. I put together a comic anthology, and it featured 17 short comic stories, all about 8 pages each focusing on the theme of crime. So there were 17 stories that were, witch trials or grave robberies or biker gangs, or a person who stole a woman's purse at a convenience store, anything revolving around crime. And in doing so, I, put out a submission. I had over 100 people send in scripts and art portfolios that I had to whittle down to my 17 teams. So in this, I'm managing about 50 different creators. I have a budget. I have to raise the money for that budget and maintain that budget. I have a schedule of deadlines that I have to keep all these creators to. If something goes wrong, it's up to me to figure out, how to solve this problem. You know, say I lose a colorist, I have to find another colorist because this book has to get colored. And all these things are problems that you deal with at Marvel. You know, they're all, I'm managing, you know, different creators between Star Wars, Darth Vader, Kanan, the Lando miniseries, Shattered Empire. You know, I have deadlines, I have budget constraints, you know, all the same things that I was dealing with on Lawful Good, I'm now dealing with at Marvel. So doing that book definitely gave me adequate experience, you know, that I don't think I would have had otherwise.
And the confidence too, I would imagine as well.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's funny when I started putting together Unlawful Good, it was my, you know, I'm interested in comic editing. This is going to be my calling card, my resume piece, if you will. And when I started doing it, it was more so not to, okay, this is going to get me a job, but more so to see if I could do it. And so having done it, having managed 50 creators, having, you know, raised over $10,000 on Kickstarter and like funding this book and like doing it, it's really cool to, you know, look at it and be like, oh, I did this.
Well, it's definitely a good mark on the resume, I imagine, but also in the sense of personal satisfaction. But again, like you said, yeah, this is all practical real world experience for what you have to entail in your role with the Marvel Comics line of Star Wars books. And that's not a light burden, I would imagine, considering, you know, it's, I imagine it's a bit like not just herding cats, but juggling them as well while they're on fire and trying to play the ukulele as well, or at least trying to get Jordan to stop playing the ukulele. what's that like? You know, I mean what does that kind of work like?
Jordan to stop playing the ukulele? I mean, it's harder than you think.
Well, the guy does have an audience. So, have you heard his cover of Hall & Oates?
I've heard quite a few covers. He has two ukuleles in the office, so...
clearly, you know, it's in, you know, with having to deal with the plethora of books, you know, and as you were discussing it, what is the process like for you guys?
I mean, it varies, you know, every day is a little different. But you know, you get scripts in from the writers. Working on Star Wars books is unlike working on, you know, Marvel books, because with Star Wars, we do have a lot of interaction with the folks at Lucasfilm and the story group and things like that. To make sure that in this new canon, everything is kosher. So we work very, very closely with story group, everything from plot outlines, you know, we come up with the writers and we work with the writers, and then we, you know, have Star Wars retreats, as you will, if it's in person or if it's a conference call, where we'll sit and talk with story group and we'll talk story and be, you know, this is what's going on in the Star Wars universe, this is what we would like to propose. And those are, you know, some really fun conversations that we get to have, because it's like, you know, when you're in college and you're sitting around with your friends and you're talking about, oh, wouldn't it be cool if, you know, Han and Chewie took the Millennium Falcon and did this X, Y, and Z, and then Luke and Leia did this, except for us, it's real and we get to make it real and actually count. so it's a lot of fun getting to talk story and stuff with that, with story group and the writers. But yeah, so we get the plots and we get the scripts and we, go back and forth and make sure everything's okay. From there, you know, we talk with the artists and we work very closely with the artists. We get pages in and we make our notes throughout, when we get pages in art, and, slowly but surely you guys get a comic book to read.
Well, so far the work has been, far more than successful, I would imagine. I mean, you know, sales aside, the critical reaction to these books, I mean, all of these books is uniformly across the board met with great applause and bombastic yahaw. I mean, Shattered Empire, I don't know if you heard our podcast on it last week, but Jeff McGee and I were just floored by how good it was.
Oh, awesome. Thank you.
And it was also kind of, you know, obviously because, and
you know, spoilers abound, obviously, but you know, when with the, you know, the introduction of Sergeant Dameron, and obviously, you know, a lot of people are like, ah, hey, that's pretty kind of cool. Does it give you guys a kind of a fun thrill to be able to reveal and sort of slowly, you know, peel back this onion that is the Star Wars canon, especially with all the intense, I don't want to say hype, but just intense, gosh, what's the word here? You know, as people are so desperately and desirously awaiting the release of The Force Awakens as we move into the next round of the cinematic excursions for the saga. You know, do you ever kind of get the point and kind of look at each other when you're talking to the writers, whether it's Greg or Jason or whatnot, or, you know, or just going, wow, this is going to have a resonating effect through, you know, not just the original trilogy, but possibly in on to the next trilogy as well, not to mention the books.
Yeah, you know, it's such a great time to be working in the Star Wars universe with not only the new movies coming out, but, you know, canon has been refreshed and everything is new and counts. So with everything that happens, it's all so closely tied now, and it's such a fun thing to be a part of. And it's such a fun thing to witness and read what the fans pick up on. Cause we don't know, you know, like we'll put stuff in the books that we're really excited about. But fans might not be as excited, or they'll pick up on something else. Like when, the Sergeant Dameron thing, like you said, we weren't 100% sure that fans would pick up on it right away if they would put two and two together. And the fact that fans did, and the fact that it was as huge of a response as it was, is so cool. And I'm even more excited for the fans to read the rest of the issues now as we lead forward and progress further towards The Force Awakens. It's so exciting. I, you know, searching on Twitter and reading the reviews and reading the fan mail is like one of the best parts of my job.
It's got to be. And you guys both seem so, not just seem, but you guys are so definitely into it. I mean, I read the Tumblr that you maintain and the Tumblr that Jordan maintains. And I have to say, the letters pages in all the Star Wars books are probably among the most vital of any of the Marvel titles. And they really are evocative of those letters pages from the late 70s and throughout the 80s, which is so refreshing, because you figure that that would be a dying or a dead art. And the fact that you guys have brought it back is, I think, adds to the mystique and to the allure, as well as to the homage to the original Marvel series.
Yeah, yeah. It was, well, I mean, Star Wars. I mean, the Star Wars letters page is literally a play on the book from the 70s. You know, it's so fun getting to write them. I've taken over responding to the Star Wars letters pages, and it's so much fun. I love talking with the fans and hearing what they say and getting to respond. And Kieran is great on the Empire Rides Backs for Darth Vader. He's just a wacky guy. I love him.
Going into the next one, though, with the release, obviously with Force Friday and the build up to The Force Awakens, one of the great things was the release of all these new novels. You know, Aftermath, this new trilogy, mm-hmm. by Chuck Wendig, as well as the books being written by Greg Rucka and others and illustrated by Phil Noto. And of course, Lost Stars, which has just been a very intriguing read. Is this another aspect that you guys are able to sort of consider as you move forward with, you know, Shattered Empire and the possibility of other titles?
I mean, anything is, in a way. Greg Rucka, as you know, he wrote the book Smuggler's Run, which just came out on Force Friday, and he's also writing Shattered Empire, you know, so he has a bit of experience working in those books. You know, when we cross over writers like that, you might see some crossover from stuff that they do. But I mean, everything's canon right now, so everything counts. Jordan and I read the manuscripts of the books that come out. We read the books, you know, well before the fans get to. So we are just as aware of what's going on.
So, you know, everything can cross a path at some times. You never know. But the thing to keep in mind, I think, going forward with the new canon and the new movies is the Star Wars universe is so much bigger than just the Skywalker saga that we've seen from episodes 1 through 6. So I think it's so exciting getting to expand our horizons with these new books and new characters and explore different corners of the universe.
Well, I think that's a nice segue to the other question I had and that I was considering. What about in terms of poking around these corners in terms of a more limited series or even maxi series?
That's something that, you know, we've definitely talked with Story Group and Jordan and I have discussed. There's a lot of different things we would like to do and we would like to try and do. You know, I come with my knowledge and background of Star Wars that I love, and Jordan has his, and Story Group has things that they'd like to see done. So, you know, there's no telling where these books are going to go. You know, this is just our first year and they've done so well that, you know, I feel like right now the universe is the limit. You know, we could do almost anything and try almost anything. And I'm really excited for you guys to read what's coming up. We have a lot of cool new things up our sleeves.
One thing that I've noticed has been the diversity of the new characters that have been introduced in the comics. I mean, Sana Solo is one. The new Dr. Aphra or Dr. Aphra?
Aphra.
Aphra. Okay, you've heard it here. It's Dr. Aphra. And then, of course, you know, with the upcoming Chewbacca miniseries written by Jerry Dugan and being drawn by Phil Noto, it's a Zabarro? No.
Zorro.
Is that we're seeing a lot more women in the Star Wars comics, which is great fun and, I think, obviously reflective and indicative of the readership as well. Is that a moment for everyone to sort of say, yeah, like you said, it is a wide, big universe.
It is. And, you know, bringing diversity is something that Jordan and I were very, very conscious of doing and doing these books. But even the writers, too. I mean, it wasn't like one day Jordan and I were like, OK, you know, we need to make sure we have X, Y and Z amount of people of diversity. No, I mean, Star Wars, the universe is even more diverse than our world is, you'd think. It's a lot bigger. It's awesome getting to see all these brand new kick-ass females. You know, I love Sana Solo. I think she's great. And I cannot wait for the readers to see what goes on with her. And Dr. Aphra is probably my new favorite addition. If not BT and 000, cause they're pretty great. But yeah, there's, I want there to be a different character for everyone to relate to. And it's fun getting to create these new characters and see them interact with Han, Luke, and Leia as if they've been there all along, and it's so much fun.
Well, and then who do we need to direct an online petition for a Dr. Aphra miniseries or a maxi series?
Or even
an ongoing monthly.
I do enough petitioning in office, so.
Outstanding.
Well, but you don't want her to leave the Darth Vader series just yet. I mean, she's got some important work she's doing in there, so don't call for a mini just yet.
Well, I mean, this you know, she's got quite a history, I'm sure. So there's probably plenty of room for her own, so without taking away from Kieran's play box. So. One of the things that Marvel was famous for, and one of the things that I remember vividly when I was a reader back in the early 1980s, was Marvel did a lot of cinematic adaptations, whether it was The Last Starfighter to, of course, Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, as well as my personal favorite, Buckaroo Banzai. With The Force Awakens coming out, any plans at all for a similar return to that milieu, if you will, after the film was released?
That's definitely possible. Adi Granov just did beautiful covers for the reprintings of the adaptations of the original trilogy that have just, I think they're all in print now. I think I think they've hit the shelves. So, you know, they've just done those. So you never know. It's definitely possible.
Well, cool. In this first round of questions, Heather, is there anything I should be asking you that I have not asked you within the limits that you can discuss? Or is there anything in particular that you want to emphasize or bring forward?
I don't know. It's too late at night. The cogs aren't turning. No, I think the biggest thing for me to always say is, you know, if there is a series that you guys as fans want to see, or if you just want to talk with Jordan and I Star Wars, you know, reach out to us. And we do read your fan mail, you know. That's one of the first things I do every day is I go through the emails and see what fans have written. You never know what might spark our interest. If you're looking for R2-D2 C-3PO buddy cop comic, write us, let us know. It might happen.
I know that there has been some scuttlebutt, at least among the Twitters, and you can always rely on everything you read on Twitter.
Absolutely.
It's 100% factual. There has at least been a desire to have perhaps a new Marvel team-up book, you know, with R2-D2 and character to be named here. So
yeah,
you never know. All right. Well, the next round of questions, these are basically the second five that I sent to you. This is something that Coffee with Kenobi does as a podcast, and we're under their umbrella, so to speak. And so we're trying to have some sort of similarities. And so we thought, well, what a great idea! And you are actually our first guest ever.
Woo! I'm honored.
Thank you. We're really pleased that you could join us. But before we start, I want to just double check. Can you say your name for me so that we are pronouncing it correctly?
Yes, it's Heather Antos.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Shall we roll into these questions and take your time if you want to? And these are very basic, obviously.
Sure.
Of the six Star Wars films, possibly seven, what is your favorite Star Wars movie?
I can't say anything about seven. I don't know. It's tough. Like, instinctually, I want to say A New Hope, but all my favorite moments are in Empire Strikes Back. So it's tough. I don't know. I'll say A New Hope because it's like the instinct to say that. It was my first Star Wars movie, so yeah.
How old were you when you saw it?
Oh, gosh, I was probably like 4 or 5, like real little. I watching movies with my dad was a big part of growing up and our bonding, and he showed me everything from, you know, Jaws and all the James Bond films. I'm a big James Bond fan, and Star Wars and Indiana Jones. And that was a big part of my childhood. And I was probably 4 or 5 when I first saw the original trilogy.
Whom or even what is your favorite character?
R2-D2, hands down.
Why so?
He's the true hero of the Star Wars universe, I think. No, as I say, there are only two characters who get you out of trouble in Star Wars, and they're R2-D2 and Chewbacca. Everyone else gets you into trouble.
That's a very apt description. So.
He's a true hero. Saves the day.
No argument there. None whatsoever. What is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
I want to say on Dagobah in Empire Strikes Back when Luke is trying to lift his X-Wing out of the swamp and he can't the first time. I can't remember the exact line of dialogue, but it's Yoda saying, you know, you don't succeed because you don't believe. It's because he's not believing in himself and the Force. And I think that's just a really cool moment.
It's a very, very profound moment, I think, as well.
So. Oh, definitely, definitely. And it speaks a lot to, you know, Luke's growth later. And we see, you know, I mean, it's Dagobah. You see a big transition with Luke there.
Very much so. If you collect... What is your favorite collectible that you own?
I collect all the Star Wars Funko Pop characters. Nice. I have quite a few. I want to say, I don't know, probably almost 50 of the Star Wars Funko Pop characters. And every time I see a new one, I have to get it. I have a problem probably with that. I have no problem dropping $100 on Star Wars Funko Pop characters in one day. But the second I have to spend like $60 on a new microwave, I question if that's too big of an expense. I'm like, I don't know if I can afford buying a new microwave, but I need these 10 new Funkos.
Well, admitting that you have a problem, I guess, is the first part of solving the problem. But it sounds like it's not a problem.
Because, it's not a problem. No, because, I need more Funkos.
You know that you're addicted. So if you know that you're addicted, you've already conceded that you are addicted, so you're not really addicted. So
There you go. You make me feel so much better now.
My daughter is also an enormous fan of the Star Wars Funko Pops. So she's her favorite at the moment is the Wampa. So
the Wampa is pretty good. I'm very excited for the new Jabba the Hutt and Slave Leia collection that's going to come out, because I just want the little Solicious Crumb.
Well, we'll get a little deeper here. We're a little more metaphysical.
Uh-oh.
What particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
I mean, a big one is, again, it's with Yoda and Dagobah. It's the, you know, you don't succeed because you don't believe in yourself, and the do or do not, there is no try. Those, as cliche as they are, I think they're very important messages to send, and they're things that stick with me as a person, as a creator, and how I live my life.
That's pretty cool.
I'm a little Jedi Padawan.
Okay, excellent. Now, just to add for us as well, to move away from Star Wars, you're the assistant editor on the Star Wars books, but that's not the only thing you do for Marvel, though, is it?
Nope. I also am an assistant editor on all the Deadpool books. So all the Deadpool miniseries, like the Deadpool vs. Thanos that's out right now, or Deadpool Secret Wars, Deadpool Return of the Living Deadpool, all that stuff. And I also have been working on the X-Men 92 Infinite comic that's been coming out.
So Gwenpool, here to stay?
I mean, they just announced a lovely little holiday special that she's involved in that's coming out during the holiday season. So hopefully, well, who knows? It's really interesting that the fandom that started just from a variant cover, you know, we never expected it to explode.
Yeah, it's amazing because, you know, I saw when you guys announced the the holiday special, then the backup stories and the new Howard the Duck, that all of a sudden everybody on eBay yanked their covers that they had for sale and doubled or tripled their asking price. And oddly enough, they're getting it. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, it's so funny because it started, like you said, of the Gwen Stacy variant program that we did, where every, you know, there was like 20 different covers in 1 month that they did a Gwen Stacy version of that character. So we had Spider-Gwen, obviously, and then Gwenpool and Gwen Stacy, Iron Man, et cetera, et cetera. And as soon as that cover came out, we had people exploding our inboxes with cosplay photos and fan art. And it's just, it's crazy. And so, yeah, you guys asked for it and you're getting a Gwenpool story.
Sweet.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I'm the art for the holiday story is done. It's in super great, and I'm very excited for you guys to see it.
Cool. All right, and now finally, and then I will let you be so you can go have the rest of your evening. What are you reading? What's in your pull? What's on your pull list? What's in the stack for you? And it doesn't have to be Marvel. It's just, what are you as a comics fan and a comics pro pretty stoked about?
Well, I literally just finished reading the second issue of The Beauty by Jeremy Hahn, Jason Hurley literally right before we did this podcast. I'm very excited about that comic. It's a lot of fun. I love a good sci-fi dystopic comic. So I'm reading that. Lazarus by Greg Rucka is a big one for me. Velvet by Ed Brubaker. One of my favorite DC books out right now, even though it just got announced it was getting canceled and I'm sad. But I really like Gotham by Midnight by Ray Fox. It's a very cool story. Yeah, I don't know. I like a lot of your dark, gritty stories. Those are some of my favorites.
Well, speaking of which, you saw that Omega Men is going to be pulled through 12 issues now.
Yes, I saw that. I'm very excited about that. It gets its promised 12, so hopefully the fans keep reading it and buying it, which will keep it on the shelves, and we'll see in issue 13.
Woo-hoo. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed.
I know. Just goes to show, though, that, you know, if you guys want a comic, speak up and buy it, and it'll stick around.
Very true. Okay. Heather, is there anything you want to add at all? Anything you want to say?
Thank you for having me. This is fun.
Thank you. Thank you for making the time.
Yeah.
And with that, would you do me one favor? And you don't yes. have, you can always politely decline. You don't have to do this. But would you mind saying that, you know, hi, I'm Heather Antos, and you're listening to Comics with Kenobi?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah, I can do that.
I'm trying to figure out what our tagline is. Let me look. I'm really bad. I should know about this. Bear with me. There we go. Da-da-da. You could say something to the effect, you know, you're listening. Hi, I'm Heather Antos, and you're listening to Comics with Kenobi. Serious looks at funny books. You know, don't even say that. That's stupid. or something to that effect, or whatever you want to say. That's fine. You could always say, "Don't read. Don't listen to this." So. So anyway, I'll let you go whenever you're ready to say it.
Hi, my name is Heather, and you're listening to Comics with Kenobi. Do or do not. There is no try.
Yay! Perfect.
There you go. Perfect.
I got to ask, do you have a Yoda Funko Pop?
Of course.
Excellent. All right. Excellent. Okay, I appreciate this very much. I will. I'll edit this weekend, and this should probably go out next Friday. But cool. If you have some sort of nightmarish realization that you said something you weren't supposed to say, shoot me an email and let me know, and I'll make sure that it doesn't see the light of day.
All right, sounds good. This was fun. Anytime you want me back, just give me a holler.
Count on it. I will definitely take you up on that offer.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. Have a good weekend.
All right. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that is going to do it for the latest issue of Comics with Kenobi. I want to thank Heather Antos for taking time out to talk with Matt. And Matt, thank you for taking time out to interview her for us. That was a lot of fun, and we will definitely have her back on the show. And hopefully next time I'll be able to participate as well.
I hope so, because it would be a lot more enjoyable, I think, if we were able to both of us engage with people like Heather and talk to them.
Absolutely. And do you have any final thoughts on these last two issues that we reviewed tonight?
Totally worth your time. Totally worth buying them. You can't go wrong. I mean, Lando again remains. Yeah, I'm Lando for life.
If you're not reading Lando, why the H not? That's all I got to say.
What's wrong with you? You need some help.
So join us next time again for we'll be back October 9th for issue number 8 of Comics with Kenobi. Until then, be sure to follow us on Twitter. At Comics with Kenobi, no I in with, and Matt is at Gorilla Scribe. I'm at The Jeff McGee and Marvin Dog Media. And be sure to check out our blogs on Coffee with Kenobi. I'm starting a series on mine talking about my favorite vintage Star Wars toys.
Oh, cool.
A series each month. I'm going to talk about a different subset. The first issue, is about action figures. Next time it's going to be playsets. Then I'll move into spaceships.
Are you going to do the mini ships? Remember the mini ships?
Mini rigs. I'll probably do an entire blog about mini rigs and why I love mini rigs. I am a mini rig apologist.
My one regret was that as a teenager, I was never able to find the indoor Forest Ranger one. I had all of the other mini rigs, but I loved the way the indoor Forest Ranger looked. I thought it was
unique. That's the one that rotated, right?
Yes, I believe it did.
I've got yes, that one. There's one that I don't have, but I do have the Indoor Forest Ranger. So,
but and of course, October is a big month for comics. If you go to Coffee with Kenobi and just click on the Star Wars comics tag, you'll see all the stuff that we put up there. We have previews of upcoming issues, what we call solicits, and you can also get an idea of what's coming up for October by looking through this. I mean, Chewbacca starts its 5-issue run, and that's going to be written by Jerry Dugan, who's been writing Deadpool, and it's going to be drawn by Phil Noto, whose work you can see in the 3 young adult novels that are part of the Journey to Star Wars, The Force Awakens literary bonanza. These are books, Moving Target, which is a Princess Leia adventure, Smuggler's Run, which is about Han Solo and Chewbacca, and The Weapon of a Jedi, which is about Luke Skywalker. And these books are really great because they start with a prologue that is basically set leading up to The Force Awakens, and it's a look back to events that happened and after perhaps A New Hope and before The Empire Strikes Back, or in, for example, the Moving Target about Princess Leia, it's after the Battle of Hoth and before the Return of the Jedi, and it's it gives you an idea of some interesting things that that we may or may not see in the Force Awakens and in other media to come. But also the great thing about October is that the Shattered Empire 4-issue miniseries will conclude. The 3rd issue is on sale October 7th, so we'll be talking about that on our next episode. And then the 4th issue comes out later in October, so that's going to be really intriguing. And near and dear to everyone's heart, you know him, you love him, you can't get enough of him. But Star Wars issue number 11. Chewbacca and Dengar are going at it.
Awesome.
Just this massive pugilistic portrayal example of man versus very large hairy creature, good versus evil. And it's Dengar, y'all. Dengar. And
it's not every day you get to watch a walking carpet battle a man who wraps his head in toilet paper.
That's so well said.
I'm looking forward to that.
Oy, 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 we'll
find out if Dengar is truly a two-ply superhero.
I'm sure he's at least a Cottonelle.
Let's hope.
One can only hope.
And I'll be looking forward to checking out those young adult novels. You know, even as an adult, a young adult novel to me is like it's like a good popcorn movie if it's well written, because you can get through it in a hurry. And
you can. And these I got to tell you, Jeff. I have read. Once I conclude with the I want to say Mark Hamill with the Luke Skywalker one, I will have read all of the novels that came out on Force Friday, and heads and shoulders, my favorite is Lost Stars, which is it's marketed as a young adult novel, but it's this most amazing story because it's about these two kids who are 8 years old, and it follows them from the day literally like the day they were born, the day the Empire was founded. And it ends right after the Battle of Jakku, with that Star Destroyer crashing into the sand.
I cannot wait.
And it's these two brand new characters, but it's set against this backdrop of the events that we know of, the events of A New Hope, the events of The Empire Strikes Back, the events of Return of the Jedi, and it gives us this different look, sort of this behind the scenes look, and there's characters in it that you are introduced to, but then you realize played pivotal roles that you will remember. I mean, for example, one of them, without giving too much away, is the person who found the flaw in the Death Star. But it's not the guy you see walking up to Tarkin going, "We have analyzed their plans." But it's all interconnected, and it's so wonderfully done and so well written that, there should never be a stigma attached to anything just because it's YA.
Absolutely.
But Lost Stars, I think it's required reading if you're a Star Wars fan. It is required. It should be mandatory. You should be able to prove you should be able to prove that you've read it before you're allowed to go into the theater on December 18th.
Well, see, I was going to wait until after December 18th to read all of that because I'm as spoiler-free as possible. So hopefully the fact that I'm a co-host on several Star Wars podcasts will serve as my bona fides. But just going on a tangent, speaking of young adult novels, if anybody who's listening has not checked out Coffee with Kenobi's own Corey Club's young adult novel, Uncanny Day. I cannot recommend it enough. I don't know, Matt, have you had a chance to read it yet?
I have got it queued up. It's sitting here on my desk. It's actually now second from the top, which means I should be tackling the next week or so.
Well, yeah, it is going to be time well spent. I sat down to read it and read it. I read historically slow, and I get through it in 3 days, in 3 sittings.
Oh, that's great.
Two of those being an hour lunch break at work. So that tells you, I came home one night and I said, I've got to finish this book. It is compulsively readable, and the world that he creates is amazing. So anybody who hasn't checked that out yet, who's listening, go check it out. You can get it for, I think, $3 to $5 on Amazon, on Kindle, and it's worth every penny. And, you know, Corey, not only being a great guy, is just a tremendous writer. So I think you're going to enjoy it.
Excellent. Thank you, man.
So until next time, for Comics with Kenobi, Matt, thanks for joining me tonight.
Thank you.
And until next time, may the Force be with you.
Always.
Comics with Kenobi's theme song is Mark Hamill Can Handle by Chris Cape. Check Chris out at chriscape.com and on SoundCloud, on Twitter at Chris Cape, and on Facebook.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along. Move along.
Don't wanna see us running the galaxy. Don't wanna see us running the galaxy. Don't wanna see us running the galaxy. Don't wanna see us running the galaxy.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play. Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.